Translation: these four brothers and their family members fully engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya. They knew no other god or goddesses. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has said, Anya Devashray Nai Tomari Kahinu by E Bhakti Parama Karana. If one wants to become a pure, staunch devotee, one should not take shelter of any of the demigods or goddesses. Foolish Mayavadis say that worshipping demigods is as good as worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that is not a fact. This philosophy misleads people to atheism. One who has no idea what God actually is thinks that any form he imagines or any rascal he accepts can be God. This acceptance of cheap gods or incarnations of God is actually atheism. It is to be concluded, therefore, that those who worship demigods or self-proclaimed incarnations of God are all atheists. They have lost their knowledge, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Kamais tais tair hrita gyanaha prapajyante nidevataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. That's from Bhagavad Gita 7:20. Unfortunately, those who do not cultivate Krishna consciousness and do not properly understand the Vedic knowledge accept any rascal to be an incarnation of God, and they are of the opinion that one can become an incarnation simply by worshipping a demigod. This philosophical hodgepodge exists under the name of the Hindu religion, but the Krishna consciousness movement does not approve of it. Indeed, we strongly condemn it. Such worship of demigods and so-called incarnations of God should never be confused with the pure Krishna consciousness movement. Om Agyanata Miranda Shyad Inanjana Salakaya Chakchur Militam Yana Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Makam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Lagayate Grim Yatkipatamaham Vande Shri Gurim Dinataranam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pravinitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shishi Radhago Klanandaki, Shishi Taram Lakshman Hanuman, Shishi Gonitaki. I'll just read the three translations once again. Their two brothers were named Sripati and Srinidhi. These four brothers and their servants and maidservants are considered one big branch. There is no counting the sub-branches of these two branches. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu held congregational chanting daily at the house of Srivas Pandit. These four brothers and their family members fully engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya. They knew no other god or goddesses. So just prior to this, it's mentioning the other two brothers. Was anyone here last week's class? Do you remember who the other two brothers of these two brothers are? So there's four brothers been mentioned, and two brothers previously mentioned were Srivas Thakur and Sriram Pandit. So Srivas Thakur, Sriram Pandit, Srinidhi, and Sripati, these four brothers, they're considered to be one big branch of the Chaitanya tree. In the previous verse it was mentioned that Srivas and Sriram Pandit were two branches, but together these four brothers and all their family members are considered to be one big branch. And in the previous verses, it's also mentioning, it's quoting from, Srila Prabhupada's quoting from Gauraganadesha Deepika, that Srivas Thakur, in his previous incarnation, is none other than, anybody know? Narad. And that Sriram Pandit was? Narada Muni's buddy, his friend, Parvat Muni. So I'm not sure who the other two brothers are. Sri Pati and Sri Nidhi. Does anybody know that? Anyone know their Gurudev Deepika? But we can understand that there'd be someone quite significant because Lord Chaitanya, he actually daily performed kirtan in Shiva Sangam, the house of Shiva's Thakur, with all these associates. So you can imagine how significant and how important these devotees are to him. We see that even to set an example, Lord Chaitanya, he wasn't very enthusiastic to accept an invitation to meet Maharaj Prataparudra. But Maharaj Prataparudra, of course, is an elevated devotee. But we see every day he's here at Shiva Sangam chanting with the devotees. So there's no count. It was also mentioned there's no counting of the sub branches. So such was their great influence that it was difficult to estimate how many devotees and people who they had made devotees who were part of that branch. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this is the evidence. This is the proof of a powerful Vaishnava by how many people they can convert to Vaishnavism. So of course it's not some kind of numbers competition, numbers game. Although we are in the middle of a book distribution marathon just now in the UK, and the numbers are very important to the devotees. But this is a transcendental competition, of course. I'm not going to turn this into a Sankirtan class, but we can't avoid it, being in the marathon. So the transcendental competition between the devotees is to compete to see who can serve, not to see who can be the supreme. And if someone is doing well in Sankirtan, then they're very happy because they see all the books going out. But if someone is beating them, they're even more happy because there's more books going out. Because the whole purpose is to reclaim the fallen conditioned souls. This is the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is the mission that Srila Prabhupada brought to us. And we see that Srila Prabhupada, he had no material facility when he came to the West. And we are very fortunate we have so much material facility. So without any facility, then he actually converted many people to Vaishnavism. And not just many people, but many Western people who were addicted to all the taboo principles. I was just reading recently in the Srila Prabhupada Nectar book that Prabhupada was exaggeratedly referring to some of the habits of the Western people. He says they eat a piece of meat which is 300 years old, and then they boil it in water and add salt to it, and then they consider it food. So this is the Western devotees were really diametrically opposed to the Vedic principles in their whole lifestyle, their habits. But Srila Prabhupada, by his potency as a pure devotee, he converted many, many people to Vaishnavas. And so this is the proof of the potency. So sometimes if we think we're such a great devotee, we should think, well, how many people have I converted to become a devotee? And then we can look at ourselves and do a bit of introspection and think, okay, maybe I have to improve my sadhana, get some good association. And even if we can make one devotee, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was such a great devotee, but he was so humble that he said that even if I can raise one of my devotees to the mode of Pashna, I'll consider my movement a success. So sometimes we mistake the modes. We think that I'm so much in the mode of goodness, Prabhu, why are you so passionate? You know, just calm down. But sometimes we actually mistake what we think to be the mode of goodness, and it's actually the mode of ignorance. So we can think, even if one is in a mode of passion, then use it for Krishna, use it for Krishna's service. But really, when I was on the Bhakti program, I was told the three modes of material nature were explained to me very simply, that mode of Goodness means first we think and then we act. Mode of passion means that we act without thinking. And the mode of ignorance means we don't think and we don't act. So these devotees, it's been mentioned here that they were fully engaged in Lord Chaitanya's service. They had no other interest. They were not interested in what they could get for themselves. They weren't interested in anything other than serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And therefore they were able to affect others, because if you do not have something, then you cannot give it. If someone comes to me just now and says, can you give me £10, then I may be willing, but my pockets are empty, I can't give it. But if I have something and then I'm willing, then I can give it. So if someone comes to you with inquiry and they say, can you give me pure love of God? And say, I'm sorry, I don't have it yet, I'm still working on it. So we can only give what we have. And Srila Prabhupada was once asked, he was on a room conversation, and there's one Indian gentleman, he said to Prabhupada that nowadays it's very difficult to find a pure devotee to surrender to. So Prabhupada asked him, Prabhupada turned the tables, he wasn't going to be fooled by this. He says, so what is a pure devotee? And the man couldn't answer. He says, so if you do not know what is a pure devotee, how will you find one? He says, actually, there are many pure devotees on this planet right now, but because you don't want to surrender, therefore you cannot find one. So just like Jesus Christ said, seek and you shall find. So depending on what we're seeking, that will determine what we find. And then as the Buddhists often say, that you be careful what you seek because you may find it. And then you may later on regret it and think, oh, I've cashed in my chips a bit too early. So the human form of life is so valuable, we cannot conceive of the value of this human form of life. We have been through so many, many species, and we come across a human form of life. And therefore, we're very fortunate because we have become aware of the use of this human form of life. And therefore, we shouldn't take it lightly. Srila Prabhupada says that a pure devotee does not like to remain idle. So we may not be pure devotees, but if we keep ourselves fully engaged in Krishna's service, just as these devotees were, then we will become a pure devotee. And Prabhupada also said that we should take the association of a pure devotee or devotees. So we shouldn't think nobody's worthy of me associating with them because none of you are pure devotees. And Prabhupada never let us away with that one either. He says, so if you can't find a pure devotee, associate with a devotee. And Prabhupada also said that you do not know who's sitting next to you. It could be Narada Muni. Of course, that's not for us to sit there thinking, yeah, you don't know who you're sitting next to. I could be Narada Muni. If you were Narada Muni, you'd know it. If you were someone, but even someone like that, some great soul, they wouldn't, you know, be so proud to put themselves forward like that. So the important thing is appreciating the association of devotees. And this way we can keep that association. So often we find that people lose the association of devotees, and this is often because familiarity breeds contempt. If we become over familiar with devotees and think they're ordinary people, and we think we can just treat them like ordinary people, then it may be tolerated for some time, but after some time Krishna is not very happy with it, and we lose our taste for associating. Nobody's worthy of associating. We lose our taste for chanting, and if we're really unfortunate, we lose our taste for prasad, which is the secret weapon. We really don't want to lose the taste for that. So I made an interesting experiment one day. We were going on Sankirtan in this bus, and there was maybe about 15 or 16 of us on the bus. So myself and one other devotee, we were sharing the driving, and we were dropping devotees off at different spots on the way along, because we drop off two or three here and so forth. So by the time we got to the last spot, we had a few hours of driving. And all we did on the way there was criticise the devotees. Oh, this one's like this and this one. And did you see the shape of this one? And did you see this one did this today? And by the time we got to the end of the journey, we were just feeling so unenthused that we realised that we were worse than all of them. All the mistakes that we found in everybody, we had found all those mistakes and we had them. We had absorbed them ourselves. So we thought, okay, let's turn the tables on this one. Let's just make an experiment of, rather than just systematically bringing everybody down to put ourselves up, which is a materialistic way of try to be important, then let's turn the tables around and just do the Vaishnava thing. Even if our contaminated heart naturally goes to the dirt, let's try to see the gold in everyone. So we picked each of those devotees' names one by one, and we played a little game of that devotee would say something nice about them, make a glorification, and then I would say something, and we'd go back and forward like this. And we went through all the devotees that we could think of, and by the time the day was finished, we did Sankirtan in between as well, but by the time the day was finished, we actually felt so blissful, and we got back to the temple, and the temple was like bright and really glowing, and we realised the temple's always like this. It's just us, you know, we just have this kind of insect mentality, very small-mindedness. And then we started to see all the devotees in a totally different light. And when you start to glorify the good qualities of devotees, then their material or their so-called imperfections or bad qualities diminish, where you practically can't even remember them, or they're so irrelevant, insignificant. So in this way, we learned a valuable lesson that no matter what situation you find yourself in, we always have to try to find some good quality in a devotee. Even if a devotee treats us, or we think they may be treated wrongly, or harshly, or unjustly, we also have to remember that, that karma is there. Perhaps I treated somebody wrongly previously. If we don't accept that, then we have to accept it some other time. So it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if we do not accept reverses which come our way, then we apportion the blame onto the person who's actually the instrument of our karma, then we have to experience that reaction again. So better that we just get hit once for it. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam didami bidhiyogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So it requires constant devotion. There's a process of knowing God. Srila Prabhupada was discussing with his disciples once. It was like a scientific discussion. It was like science versus religion, and the devotees were playing devil's advocate. And then one of the devotees, naturally because Prabhupada's a strong speaker, then he immediately just threw in a towel and says, okay, I accept God. And Prabhupada wouldn't allow him. He says, no, never mind God. He says, first of all, understand what is the soul. He says, the soul is sample God. If you understand the sample, then you can understand the whole. So first understand the sample. So Prabhupada was explaining systematically how we can preach to people who are atheists. It's mentioned in the purport here that worshippers of demigods and Mayavadis are considered atheists because, and also elsewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that unless one accepts Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one is an atheist. So one might think, well, that's a bit strong. But the fact of the matter is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is none other than Krishna. He's not like an avatar of Krishna. He's not a Leela avatar. He's actually Krishna himself. And he is the Yuga avatar. So therefore, we're all living in Kali Yuga, then it behooves us to understand who this Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. And there's plenty of Shastric evidence for that. Of course, this is it's not well known amongst many people, Christians, Hindus or Muslims, but simply by preaching the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by performing Harinam Sankirtan, by distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and so many other preaching programs, distributing of Srila Prabhupada's knowledge through his books. We can give them Prabhupada's association and distribution of prasadam. Then people will become purified. We cannot underestimate the potency of the holy name, the potency of Srila Prabhupada's books, the potency of prasadam. At one time I was in a town in Scotland called Paisley distributing books, and we had some prasad as well. I forgot I had it in my bag, so I was trying to sell this book to one lady. She said, "Oh, no, I'm not interested." And then I remembered, "Oh, prasad." So I took the prasad out and I says, "Oh, could you try some of this? Somebody made it at the temple today and we're just asking people what they think of it." So as soon as she put it in her mouth, she said, "How much is the book?" And I think a lot of devotees have had this kind of experience. In South Africa, when they were trying to establish the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness as a legal entity, then the South African government, which was before the present government, when it was very strict regime, apartheid, then they weren't having it. They, no, it must be South African Society for Krishna Consciousness. And they said, no, this is against our whole concept, you know, it can't be South African, it must be International Society. So this was arguing back and forward. And then some devotee brought in some simple, wonderful, some Mahaprasad, and said, "Anyway, just have one of these sweets." So he took the sweet and he says, "Oh, never mind, just let them have it, International Society for Krishna Consciousness." So there's many stories, I'm sure, that devotees all know of these things. And of course there's many nice stories of people getting Srila Prabhupada's books. And it may not be necessarily the person who buys the book who will read it, or who becomes a devotee. And sometimes we spend some time speaking to people on the street, and that's good, but really the main thing is to encourage them to read the books, because that potency of Srila Prabhupada's association, when you give them a book, you're actually inviting Srila Prabhupada into their home to give a class, to give a program. They're getting his association. So anyone who has a little sincerity, when they read Prabhupada's books, they will find the answers they're looking for. And of course the holy name, how many times are we out on Harinam? And people see the Harinam, immediately their faces light up. Of course it polarizes, sometimes people's faces don't light up. Sometimes people's faces look like they want to throw up. But that polarizes, you know, the people to stay away from, keep an eye on that one. But then some people are so enthusiastic they actually even join the Harinam. They just want to be part of that. I remember before I joined the temple, I had to take my little brother to see some concert, and I was standing in the queue outside this concert hall, and I had actually had a little contact with Srila Prabhupada's movement through a book and a record album. So I was becoming a little inquisitive, and then the Harinam party just out of the blue came down the street. I thought, "Oh, they're in Glasgow today." And I thought, "I hope they come over to the queue and start selling books or something." But I couldn't quite leave the queue because I was in the queue with my young brother and would leave her place. I didn't really want to be there, but it was a kind of duty to him. But I was really thinking, "Oh, I hope the devotees come over." I didn't really know them as devotees, but I was thinking, "I hope those people come over because I want to know more about it." But unfortunately they didn't, they just went by. So it made me realise later on when I joined the temple and was doing Harinam and doing books, you don't really know who's there actually wanting to be approached. Sometimes we have a bit of difficulty approaching people, we think, "Oh, people don't want to know." But it's not the case, because we all found out, didn't we? We were all heading down the same road. It's like they say, "There go I, but by the grace of God." And this is the mood of a preacher. And even if whether we're a frontline preacher or whether we're doing a backup service, then everything is actually dovetailed towards the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is to reclaim the fallen conditioned souls. So in here also is mentioning, Srila Prabhupada speaks quite strongly about the avoidance of demigod worship in Mayavadis. And it's not as if Prabhupada is upset with him because, you know, he's irritable or something like that. It's because of compassion for them and because of love of Krishna. Now, if you love somebody and somebody comes to you and says, "Well, they speak bad about the person, or they even deny the person exists, you think, oh, you're such a fool, what are you talking about? I know this person personally. This is my dear most friend you're talking about. So they speak very strongly in their defence. So this is what Prabhupada is saying when he speaks strongly against Mayavadi and demigod worship. He's speaking because he doesn't want to accept their ignorance. And there was one nice interview with Srila Prabhupada. There's an American reporter. He was asking Srila Prabhupada about various swamis and yogis. And he became very interested because Prabhupada said, oh, this one's bogus. And he mentioned another one. He said, he's also bogus. And he said, well, I'm very interested to hear that. He said, I thought you were all like scratching each other's back. And then so he says, my son, he became a follower of such and such. So he was quite pleased to hear that Prabhupada was saying that this man was bogus, the person that he was following, because he was quite concerned about his son. And then Srila Prabhupada further said, anybody who follows him is even more bogus. And why is that? Because if somebody is not giving them the place, then they won't have a place. You know, unless someone is following the bogus person, then they have no standing, they have no position. So Srila Prabhupada often states in his books that due to a poor fund of knowledge, then we accept this one as God or that one as God, or we accept this one as an authority. But when we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we no longer have a poor fund of knowledge, we have the greatest fund of knowledge. Any doubt you have or have had is eradicated by reading Prabhupada's books, and even doubts you didn't know you have, you discover them there and they're also eradicated. And Prabhupada left no stone unturned in his books. And I haven't read it, but I heard it from a Prabhupada disciple that Prabhupada said that his books were, all his books were there simply to convince us to chant Hare Krishna. So how important is that? It's the Yuga Dharma. So the glories of demigods and the glories of perhaps the Brahman effulgence, sometimes these may be attracted to the conditioned soul because they offer some relief from material distress, or they offer some higher level of sense gratification. But actually, the demigods are also servants of Krishna. And there's many examples, many leelas and stories in the Shastra which explain this to us. Take, for example, Indra, the lifting of Govardhan Hill. Now, of course, this is another point, that God doesn't have to perform some austerities to become God. It's not that the living entity is promoted to become God at some time. God is always God. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes, the origin of all, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. And this is Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's the supreme controller. Sachid Ananda Vigraha. His form is actually not a mundane form, Avajananti Mam Mutha. So fools deride me when I descend in my human-like form, and they do not know my supreme dominion over all that be. So his form is not, as mentioned in the Ishupanishad, it's without veins, it's prophylactic. It's not like if you were to cut Krishna's body open, you'd see bones and veins and things. No, his body is composed of Sachid Ananda. Krishna and his body are non-different, whereas we and our body are different. But because of the Atmanam Daryateja Gat principle, that we think, a blind man thinks everyone else is blind, or a thief thinks everyone else is a thief, or because we cannot conceive of something beyond our jurisdiction, we think that there's nothing beyond it. Then we think, well, because I don't have a transcendental body, then Krishna's form is simply a product of the material nature as well. So that's not the case, because by worship of Krishna, Vitaraga by Akroda, Manmayama Mupashita, Bhavogin Tapasa, Putamad Bhavan Agataha, becoming freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me and thus attained transcendental love for me. So previously, Krishna had already dispelled Arjuna's doubts in terms of you're not the body, and not only you're not the body, but your form, you, me, all these kings, we have always existed. So he's already established the point that the individual soul is eternal. So later on he's explaining how by remembering him, the one becomes free from all the lower qualities such as attachment, fear and anger. So by worshipping of the impersonal absolute and worshipping of the demigods, one is looking for some relief from material distress or some higher level of sense gratification. But by worshipping of Krishna, so it's also mentioned that whether one be full of all material desires, desires for liberation, no desires, then by all means one should approach Krishna. So even if we approach Krishna for the wrong purpose to begin with, then simply by approaching Krishna we'll be purified. So just as Dhruva Maharaj, he was very upset, his pride was damaged, he had been insulted, and he went to the forest to perform great austerities to get a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather, who is Lord Brahma. And he was causing such havoc with his austerities, so he had a certain motivation in his worship. And finally, when Lord Vishnu appeared to him, then what did he say? He said, I was looking after some pieces of broken glass, but I found a priceless gem. So we may come to Krishna consciousness to begin with looking for something, and in Kali Yuga most of us are approaching because we're in a distressed condition. And there may be a mixture of also looking for the absolute truth. That's quite often a result of being in a distressed condition as well. So whatever our means to approach Krishna should be, then we should just approach Krishna, because just by seeing Krishna, by taking prasadam, by hearing the name, by associating with devotees, we become purified. So to begin with, maybe our heart may be cold like iron, but when that iron is put into the fire of Krishna consciousness, then it also becomes melted. Our hard heart becomes melted by the association of devotees. So worship of Tadiya, or that which is related to Krishna, that which is related to Vishnu, is actually higher than worship of Krishna, according to Lord Shiva. Parvati is asking Shiva, what is the highest form of worship? And he said Vishnu. But better than that is actually Tadiya, that which is related to Vishnu, which is Lord Vishnu's devotees. And also in Srimad Bhagavatam, I think it's in the fourth canto, Krishna explains that one who says, here's my devotee, is not actually my devotee, but one who is the devotee of my devotee, Dasa Nudasa Nudasa, he is actually my devotee. So Krishna is looking that we will serve his devotees. Because when we hear about Krishna's wonderful pastimes, you think, oh, okay, no doubt about it. Either it's a figment of someone's imagination, or else Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when you read into the Leela and the pastimes and the philosophy, you realise that there's actually, as Prabhupada says, this Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, there's no comparison to this literature. There's no competition. There's no book out there which can come close to, you know, it's not like, oh, shall I read Srimad Bhagavatam today, or shall I read such and such? There's just no comparison. And so because of that, then we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's easy to surrender to Krishna in that sense, that we can accept that he is Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gepam Shantam Richati, that he is the Supreme Controller, the well-wishing friend of everyone. And so there's so many pastimes where Krishna's supremacy is established. But then Krishna, what does he want? He wants us tadvidi pranipatena pariprishnena sevaya upadik shanti tiyaganam ganinas tadvidarshanaha. He instructs Arjuna and everyone who is following in Arjuna's footsteps that just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. So this is practically the first sloka you learn when you walk into the temple. And it's not that you learn it then and you don't have to remember it now, because that was ages ago. But it's so important That's why it's the first one you learn. This is something we have to apply every day. We have to approach devotees who can explain the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada, he's explaining in his purports, and Prabhupada's disciples and Prabhupada's grand disciples, so many devotees, they're also expanding the purports for our understanding. As Kali Yuga goes on, then it becomes more difficult and we become more confused. Kali Yuga is a very confused age. So the association of devotees is paramount to understanding Krishna's mission. And this is what Krishna wants. If we want to please him, then we do that. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadanagati katopi. So often when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, if someone would deny that Krishna is God, they'd say, well, what is your conception of God? And then when they'd say something, they'd say, well, that is Krishna. There's no difference. People often think that because Krishna is because God is named like Jehovah, Allah, Buddha, Yahweh, whatever, they think these are different gods, but there's no difference. Of course, as devotees, we can see that, but unfortunately they can't. But Srila Prabhupada would help them understand it by asking them, what is your conception of God? And whatever qualities they come up with, then that is like a partial description of God. And then you can go further on to explain more of Krishna's glories, and they cannot refuse it. And of course, some people, they boldly declare that God does not exist because I haven't seen God. So if God was here, there's so much suffering, surely God would intervene by now. So this is a difficult question. But unless, and we probably all ask this question ourselves, and personally I found the only answer was, to explain it, was karma and reincarnation. Why is everybody suffering in this world? And there's no other question. So an atheist may say that God does not exist, and Prabhupada would say, just because you say God does not exist does not mean that God does not exist. God will not cease to exist just because you see it. And then if you want to see God, are you prepared to follow the process for seeing God? Is it such a cheap thing? You know, if you want to become a brain surgeon, can you just go on the internet and read up on a little bit, and then you go to maybe some neighbour or friend who needs some brain surgery and say, well, I've been reading up on the internet, you know, I think I've got an idea here. So there's a long waiting list, why don't I just do it for you? Because, you know, it'll be okay. And they're just going to think, oh, forget it, you know. Maybe if you go and get properly qualified first. So there's a process for becoming such a mundane thing. Become an electrician, right? Someone has to become an electrician. If you invite an electrician to work in your house, you want to know that he's properly qualified, that you're not going to be left with some live terminal somewhere, which makes you terminal. You want to know that this person actually can do the job safely. So similarly, what about something which is even more important, our eternal well-being, our spiritual life? Why should we accept that so cheaply? So the qualifications are given in the Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demonic natures. The qualifications are given in so many verses. The one is free from lust, anger and greed, then this is a bona fide spiritual master. So there's also the Mayavadis like to give interpretation of Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures to deny Krishna's personality. And there's that famous verse, Patram Pishpam Palam Toyam Yomi Bhakti Parachiti, where Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, fruit, flower or water, I will accept it. So in the purport, Prabhupada says that the Mayavadi said that Krishna does not eat, and Krishna says, I eat. So who shall we accept? Whose authority do we accept? So for us it's easy, because as being aspiring devotees, then we accept Krishna's authority. But we don't, and Prabhupada says, we don't accept some rascal upstart's version of things. So of course Srila Prabhupada also, he he said that we should not disrupt the minds of those who are attached to fruit of action. They should not be encouraged to refrain from work, but to engage in the work in the spirit of devotion. So terms such as Christian, Muslim, Hindu, atheist, thisism, thatism, then these are actually temporary terms, whereas Sanatana Dharma, the eternal religion, the eternal function of the soul, is a real terminology which everything belongs to. And that is Krishna consciousness, that is devotional service. So these books which Srila Prabhupada has given us, and the various instructions that Prabhupada has given us in the vast library of lectures and DVDs, then there's nothing left. Srila Prabhupada did not miss out on anything, very simply. And even there was one occasion where Lord Chaitanya was touring and he came across one person who was weeping, and he was reading Bhagavad Gita, apparently, but he had it upside down. And he says, "Oh, what are you doing?" He says, "Oh, I'm trying to read Bhagavad Gita." He says, "Yeah, but you've got it upside down." He says, "Yeah." He says, "So why are you crying?" He says, "Well, I can't read." He says, "But my spiritual master gave me this instruction that you just read Bhagavad Gita. So I'm trying to read this book." He says, "So why are you crying?" He says, "Well, I'm actually just so." He says, "Oh, amazing that Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accepts the role of servant of his devotee by driving Krishna's chariot," because you could see there's some picture. And he says, "Actually, you have understood Bhagavad Gita." So therefore, tesham satyata yuktanam, as we were saying earlier on, that by constant devotion, and devotion means not directly to Krishna, but by serving Krishna's devotees, then we can get the mercy of Krishna, whether we appear to be have some material impediment or not. Prabhupada said there's no material impediment. Just as there's no material thing can bring about Krishna consciousness, there's no material impediment. Of course, if we have some material objects, then yukta vairagya, we use it in Krishna's service. But there's one thing we cannot use in Krishna's service. One time I was speaking with Hari Sori Prabhu, and he's regarded as being an encyclopedia of knowledge of Srila Prabhupada's association. So I asked him once about envy. I said, "What did Srila Prabhupada say about envy?" And he answered that Srila Prabhupada said that everything can be used in Krishna's service except for envy. Envy must be given up. So if you give up that one thing, so service is actually contrary, it's opposed to envy, because envy means that we want to be the supreme controller, the enjoyer. We don't want to be the servant. So by just engaging in the service, then we extinguish that envy. And even if our heart and mind is thinking, "Oh, I don't want to do this," but if we philosophically, theoretically understand it, and we put it into practice, it will become vijnana, it will become realized knowledge. And then Srila Prabhupada said, "Whatever you have learned in Krishna consciousness, then simply give it to others." Because the devotee was asking that we have some debt, eternal debt to Prabhupada. He says, "Yes, you cannot repay that debt, but whatever you've learned, if you give that to others, then at least you can begin to try to repay the debt." So we'll just finish there. So if we just ask everyone to, whatever opportunities they get, to remind others of Krishna, to engage others in Krishna's service. And sometimes we can do it directly, and sometimes we may have to use some agyata sukriti. If someone has not got enough faith to engage them, sometimes you find some way to engage them without them even knowing. You can give them prasad, that's easy. You can inadvertently get them to say the holy name. Or there's so many books which are designed to bridge the gap in so many different ways. There's so many bridge preaching programs we can connect people to. So it's important that we don't just take this Krishna consciousness for ourselves, but we give it to others. And in this way, if we give the mercy, we will receive the mercy. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Anyone got any questions?